Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. I'm Stephanie Sison here with Jerome Ostentowski. We hope that all of our listeners have had a wonderful holiday. Our guest today is someone that many people in the Valley may know or perhaps have recently read about in the Soper Sun. Local rancher, Jose Miranda. Thanks for joining us, Jose.
Thank you for the invite, Stephanie.
Our pleasure. So Jerome was really inspired by the Soper Sun article that recently came out, and he was excited to have you on the show today. Jerome, can you talk about what about that article drew you to call Jose and have him come on?
Well, I'd been out of town for a couple of weeks, so I grabbed the Soper Sun just to see what's going on in town, right? And of course, they cover everybody that's doing anything, and you can catch up on, you know, lost news, whatever. So I thought, and then the whole concept of you taking the, you know, the dairy out to the cow and coming up with this, you know, homemade milking machine. I mean, it's kind of, you know, something that I've done before in my life in different fashions, and it's innovative, and it was innovative enough that you actually got a grant from CORE to do this. And Marty thought this is another very interesting kind of solution to a problem, but not a common solution. So it's great that people are actually appreciating something just a little different than the convention, you know. And that's, you know, that whole thing, and the whole camaraderie you have with the animals, and your history of being, you know, from Venezuela and already doing this. And anyway, so it's fascinating that. So what would you like to?
So I'd love just to jump in there, Jerome, to get a little background for our listeners about you and your time in this valley, and how long you've been here and what you've been up to so far.
I've been in the valley for about 13 years, originally from Venezuela. graduated from Montana State University in the Animal and Range Science Department for livestock and range management. So that's what brought me to Carbo. That was actually the farmland, the agriculture, the ranching community.
Yeah, we have a really beautiful, vibrant ranching community. I've been very fortunate since I've moved here to have just access to animal protein and just beautiful, beautiful ranches and animals around here. We're very lucky. So I'd love to hear a little bit more, and the article really focuses on the water buffalo. And what do you ranch currently where you've been ranching for 13 years? It's cow?
Well, here is a Black Angus, registered Black Angus ranch. And we are a seed stock producer, so we sell replacement bull and heifers for other ranches that are at high altitude mostly. So we're nationally recognized for.
And what ranch is that you're working
this
with?
This is the Tybar Ranch, It's on Prince Creek Road, just outside Carbondale.
Excellent. And so what brings you to the water buffalo? I know I've read the article, and so I know that it's from your history in Venezuela with your father. But for any of our listeners who didn't read the article, can you give us just a quick background on why water buffalo is interesting to you?
So I grew up with a very tight relationship with a water buffalo, just because I grew up in a water buffalo ranch, and so did several of my family members. So that was a big part of my life growing up. So when I left Venezuela, probably one of the things that I missed the most were the buffalos. And although I still had the opportunity to stay close to the land and work at a cattle ranch, still, you know, that call was still there somehow. And in 2014, the legislature in Colorado changed, and the water buffalo used to be listed as an exotic species. So it got changed as a domestic species listed under that category. So that opened up the doors for, you know, anyone to be able to breed it in the state of Colorado without any major obstacles.
So previously it was listed as an exotic species because it's from Asia originally?
Yeah. But, you know, that's really a mistake because it was really considered it was listed the same as the African water buffalo, which is a totally different species. They cannot even cross each other. You cannot crossbreed them. So that was basically a mistake that got corrected.
Excellent.
But actually, the water buffalo is a major player as a domestic species all over the world. We're just kind of far behind in the U.S. It's kind of got first introduced in Florida, probably 1974, I think is when it was. So it's been slow growing with very little support. So getting support with the local community, getting support from CORE for this idea is just been very, very important to get this going.
You want to talk a little bit about the portable milking machine that you came up with and how that works in terms of not bringing the cow to the barn, but going out, bringing the barn to the cow?
It's basically a little shift in paradigms due to the conditions, right? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's so difficult to for a beginner farmer rancher to get a hold of land that is affordable. So the startup is, the logical step is to lease land. So if you're going to lease land and also have to build a large facility on land that is not yours, then you're adding a big expense, tying yourself up to one location. So to kind of overcome all these obstacles and look at it in a new light of the current conditions where land is not like it used to be, it used to be free back then. Just come in the homestead, stake it, and fence it, mm-hmm. right? That's not the case anymore. Now it's actually the biggest obstacles. So a way around it is creating the right partnership, which I've been fortunately found some really good people along the way that helped me start up this herd, you know, from the Thai bar to the Sunfire Ranch. Mm-hmm. And so getting over that big obstacle, that I think this, looking at this as a model, also open up the door to see a way to solve some of the issues we have around these major dairies that is all around one central location, how you build up all that manure and urine around one location or overuse those fields you have around that one barn, which is a logical thing. So to go around it, I think this is a good way, not only for get affordable, cheaper leases in maybe more remote locations, but also to move along with the herd and manage the land in a more balanced way. Mm-hmm. Reduce water waste by not having to clean the facility every day, less labor intense, less. So at the end, you can actually produce probably cheaper.
Great. And so, and you made a really beautiful comment before we stepped into the studio about this mobile option and about how instead of having maybe the time to haul the whole herd into the dairy, that you're just being able to bring this mobile milking station out to them and get it done and milk the buffalo and get your milk for your family or for your business and then move on to your next task. I thought that was sounded like not only with what you're speaking now about the land leases, which we've talked about on this show many, many episodes about land access for farmers and that being a really big struggle in this valley. But this is a beautiful way to accomplish a lot of things, as well as the CORE grant that Jerome spoke of and being able to operate this whole mobile milking station via solar power without the use of fossil fuels. It seems like a really innovative way to move forward.
Yeah. I also like to mention that in the face of the new challenges we have with climate changes, you know, you really have to also follow where the best pastures are or run away from the big fires as well. So being able to just put your herd in a trailer and go somewhere else because it's just not going to be pasture available in your state, let's say. So there's some flexibility there.
That's a real good survival strategy right there. Yeah. Take your herd and
move on to greener pastures.
Yeah, and take your milking machine with you and you could, you know, live off the land anywhere, right? That's amazing. That's an amazing idea.
So, Jose, I'd love to hear more about the water buffalo in general, because I feel like that might be an animal that we're not quite familiar with in general. So can you tell us about that animal? What, where does it differ and where is it similar to a traditional dairy cow or its pasture needs or any of that information that you might have?
So I guess I could point out a few things about the water buffalo. It is perhaps starting to grow in very small herds in all over the states from what I've been able to find out. And it's because people are looking to fulfill those niche markets, right? To be able to go to the farmer market with a different product and differentiate themselves from everybody else. So that's one ingredient that I see that is occurring. The water buffalo, what it has is the advantage that it can graze rougher forages. So it can transform pastures that are less palatable into high protein milk or meat. The other thing that you have with the water buffalo is that it will live longer than cattle. So cattle, in average, we have 10 to 12 years lifetime. Water buffalo is 20 to 25.
Wow.
Now, the downside will be that they reach puberty at a later age. So you don't get a calf when they're about 2 years old. It's what we can do with black Angus. With water buffalo, you have to wait until they're 3 years old. So it's a long-term vision and investment to get these animals to a state of, you know, production.
And how do you feel about their adaptation to our cold climates here that we have?
So that's one of the challenges. Water buffaloes are, they will outperform any other cattle breed under tropical warm environments. So yeah, being in Colorado is a challenge, but you find water buffaloes in northern Italy, you find water buffaloes in the UK, in some Western European countries. Mm-hmm.
And you can give them shelter, you know, in the coldest nights and that too. And we talked a little bit about how they do forage more rather than their opportunists. So leaves, branches, and rougher weeds also probably more than cows or horses would be. And, you know, you're out there with Casey on Starfire or Sunfire. Mm-hmm. And I think, have you been talking a little bit about collaborating with some of the ideas that he has on agroforestry and stuff?
Yeah, we have been definitely feeding off each other's idea, and we're going to come up with some new things at the ranch probably for next spring. Yeah. But we are exploring also using some of the greenhouses in the toughest part of the winter, having some of the buffaloes there to break in a new area of a greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working with pigs to help us churn all the compost.
Tractor it a little bit,
yeah.
Right?
So
okay.
To reduce some of those expenses, reduce the use of machinery. So
exactly.
Some of that kind of thinking.
Beautiful. And so just to jump in here, you are listening to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. We're in the studio in Carbondale here with Jose Miranda talking about water buffalo, among other things. And so I'd love to jump back into our last 15 minutes or so and talk a bit about the milk that you get from a water buffalo for people who are not familiar. I read that it was described, I haven't had the milk by itself, but that it was described as sinfully rich with a butterfat content of up to 8% or over 8%. And so oftentimes, probably our listeners are most familiar with buffalo mozzarella, but can you speak a little bit about the milk or the products that you're looking to produce in the future?
So yeah, you will hear this, the buffalo mozzarella, because the original mozzarella was made with water buffalo milk.
Really?
Now you can make the mozzarella with any kind of milk, but the original recipe where it came from in Italy was from water buffalo. And that's why they really do a lot of work, and they've done a lot of work to develop the water buffalo breed for milk production. Now the water buffalo milk chemical composition is a little bit closer to that of the human, and people that are lactose intolerant will be just fine with the water buffalo milk, just like it happens with goat milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's a denser, richer milk, so you get more pounds of cheese per gallon of milk. So it's has that advantage for cheese making.
And so a lot of what I was reading about true buffalo mozzarella in Italy is that a lot of it is more perishable than some of our mozzarellas that we see now. Do you find that that's true, and that might be a benefit to having a local option for this kind of milk and this kind of cheese?
Yeah, well, the fresh mozzarella is probably the cheese that needs to be served the freshest in order to really get the good flavor of that cheese. And yeah, the modern packaging we have allows to have some fresh mozzarella that is a few days old. But if you order mozzarella, buffalo mozzarella from some of these specialty places that you can have it shipped straight to your house, it's like a next day order.
Oh my.
Yeah.
So when can we get some of this buffalo mozzarella?
Well, when we start making,
I'm hungry.
Yeah, when we start making cheese, we'll make different kinds of cheese just to fulfill the demand, see what people really want. We'll make yogurt and ice cream and different kinds of cheese.
Buffalo mozzarella yogurt or buffalo yogurt? That sounds delicious. Excellent.
Well, there's lots of activity over in that region now with Stephanie with her garden and sustainable settings and Sunfire with both of you over there. It's a, I mean, I remember, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, you know, that place was not very active. Well, there were ranches there and, you know, it's just...
well, it's a beautiful little part of our valley that has just amazing water, just as clean as it can be, beautiful sunshine. I'm very blessed to be growing out there as well as Casey, who we've had on the show with his lovely tomatoes, and great to have another addition to the area. Can you, how many or how long have you had the water buffalo out there? How many do you have? How's that relationship moving forward?
Well, I do believe that Jason Sewell is a little bit of a visionary as far as the relationship that he's establishing with young producers.
Agree.
You know, a lot of people that have private land and access to water, you know, they don't really know or have the capacity or know how expensive it is to actually run a ranch. So creating this partnership, the right partnership, and creating the right environment for these partnerships to thrive is really what he's after. And I have been working with Jason. I've known Jason for more than 10 years, but I really started working with him about 6 months ago. And the more I understand really the vision that he's after, the more I support it. And he's really very, very understanding of how difficult it is to get started and how much it takes to get to a place where you're really producing, you know, to get the wheel moving, let's say. So I think that's an important thing to consider. The one thing that would really motivate me after getting the support from CORE was being able to share with this idea with other young producers all over the country and all over the world, because I think it's one small tool, small technology that really will come in handy for small producers to at least take the first step into getting into ranching and farming.
These mobile innovations have been or can be really progressive, like the mobile slaughterhouse concept, which hopefully continues to move forward in our valley. I know that Mountain Primal Meats has the first FDA certified mobile slaughterhouse, and there's lots of young producers, again, on leased land who the financial burden and the time burden of taking these animals many, many miles away to a slaughterhouse, among other issues with those facilities, is not ideal. And so these mobile units really change the whole scene for young producers, but also just producers who are looking to either be at a smaller scale or aren't yet landowners, allowing access that they wouldn't have otherwise, and allowing us as consumers to have access to just some beautiful locally produced meats and produce and dairy that we wouldn't have otherwise. So it's really beautiful to see.
Yeah. Well,
Jerome, I would love, you just got back to us. You were missing on our last episode, and you're just coming back from Mexico. So how are you enjoying our nice snowfall since your return from the tropics?
Well, it's been a challenge after the, you know, just after a couple nights ago, and now we have to shovel all your snow free of, I was chainsawing today. So, it's good to be back. I had a nice, good, relaxing time on the beach, and but it's good to be back and getting back into the swing of things and doing saunas and keeping the greenhouse warm and so it's great. What have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Well, you know, I'm your neighbor again.
Oh, that's right.
So
yeah,
just
right.
up
that's
above right. you on Basalt Mountain as well.
Right.
So that's also right. lots of saunas in the greenhouse to keep the greenhouse warm.
So warm.
We've got a nice crop of lemons and limes and beautiful things like that. So it's been lovely. And, wintertime folks is often a time for grant writing, which is something that we're working on doing now, because out at Sustainable is where I grow medicinal herbs with Brooke and Rose and those guys for production for not only my own company, but other companies and apothecaries as well, all biodynamic medicinal herbs like echinacea and St. John's wort and things like that. So we're looking to raise some funds for a dehydration facility that's bigger than the one that we have. So winter time's time for tucking in and writing and trying to dream about next year. Already starting seeds because I'm impatient.
Yeah, I have to keep those seed catalogs off the table.
Oh, I know.
I just ordered something today. I couldn't help
myself. You can't help it. It's December. What about it's planting season? Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah. So, Jose, how can our listeners help or get involved or see a buffalo or figure out more about this industry or this product or what you're doing out there?
People are going to find out more about the Butter Buffalo when we're ready to make it more public and open for the people to really go and hang out with the animals. We do want to make all of this also educational.
Excellent. Yeah. I think that's
so we're going to be in touch. We'll make another program just about that.
Perfect. About how to pet a water buffalo. Yeah. I think many of our listeners probably have never seen a water buffalo. So that's fair. So Jerome, can you let us know about what's happening at Crimpy and as if there's any courses that are coming up or what you're up to in the winter and how people can get involved?
Well, we are, again, kind of taking this winter to do some grant writing and program development. And and Vanessa is, taking care of the nursery, and we're, doing tinctures and kind of selling them here locally. And and we may be starting some microgreens. I think we're probably going to start a little microgreen grow out when Louie gets back with Callie. So we have a great group up there. And
we do. Are you going to sell them to Skip's Market, new basalt? Everyone's very excited about the new market in basalt, which is called Skip's Market. If you haven't been there, please stop by. It is absolutely the place who has the most. I don't know if they have anything that's not local as far as within the Paonia or Palisade or our valley. Skip has done an amazing job of supporting local farmers, not only in the store where you can purchase all of these goods from local farmers, but most of the staff is actually local farmers who are needing a little extra work in the off season.
It's amazing how that whole thing's come full circle today. We're selling some stuff. My book is being sold there, and Skip is just he's given so much of his last few years to agriculture. It's good to see that, and we don't instead of driving that extra distance to get produce, you might as well get it right there.
I was in there yesterday, and there's carrots and apples and squashes and fresh baked breads and just a really amazing array of products. I was highly impressed with his commitment pretty much to any farmer who's willing to grow something or has something to bring forward. He's an absolute full-on yes, I will take it and provide it to the community. So
that's our little mini food hub that we have now. It's a little part of that whole mycelium. So from that, the things are going to be growing out exponentially, right? And pretty soon you'll have your
water buffalo.
Water buffalo cheese in there, right?
The yogurt.
I hear great things about that market. I'm actually going to have to make a little trip over there to check it out.
You should. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Jerome, can you give your phone and web information for folks looking for workshops?
So if people want to sign up for workshops next year, we have the weekend ones and Academy and the PDC design course, which Stephanie, you'll be involved in, and Adam will be there, and crmpi.org or 927-4158, 927-4158, to see all our schedule for next year. And we're looking forward to having Adam Brock on the show in the next couple of months, and we're also going to have some other people from Farming the Woods another Chelsea Green authors, pair of authors, and we'll have them probably next month.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
And so thanks, Jose, for joining us. And as we close our December episode of the Living Permaculture Show, we invite all of you to look up into the sky and the heavens above every night, but especially on our next full moon, January 1st. This moon is known as the Wolf Moon. Step outside, open your eyes, your heart, and your voice to howl with us. Howl in celebration of all that we have gained and all that we have lost in this last year. Howl to welcome all that is yet to come. Thanks for tuning in to Public Radio KDNK. We will see you in the next year.